Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
Hello, this is international Catholic singer Anna Nuzzo, inviting you to join me and Father Dan Cambra of the Marian Fathers on a select international tour's Divine Mercy pilgrimage to Poland and the Czech Republic. It takes place in September of 2019, and we would love for you to join us. For more information, go to my website, annanuzzo.com. Thank you, and God bless.
Looking for the perfect First Communion, Confirmation, or RCIA gift? Consider a beautiful, heirloom quality, made-in-Italy rosary from Ghirelli. A Ghirelli rosary will be prayed with and cherished forever, guaranteed. Shop Ghirelli today. That's GHIRELLI.com.
Introducing the redesigned CatholicSingles.com, featuring new ways that put the spotlight on the person and their faith, not just a profile picture. For the past 20 years, faithful Catholics have used CatholicSingles.com, and the reimagined CatholicSingles.com website is ready to help single Catholics take the next step in sharing meaningful relationships with other faithful Catholics. Remember, CatholicSingles.com for faith, fellowship, and love.
Wait a minute! 60 Seconds of Reflection with Martha Fernandez-Sardina.
He is risen! The Lord is risen from the dead. That is the song of Christians. The Lord is risen, alleluia. He is truly risen, as he said, alleluia, alleluia. For centuries, Christians the world over have been celebrating the fact that Christ defeated death. He killed death. Death is dead. Life is alive. And Jesus is alive and well, and he is inviting each one of us, knocking at the door of our hearts, to enter in, to sup with us, to dine with us, to give us his very body and blood, soul and divinity, as our food. Will you welcome him? Will you season it up? Will you enjoy this Easter Sunday, Easter octave, and Easter season, 50 days of glorious celebration, and come closer to Jesus to receive the new life that he has won for you? You were one by one who is God Almighty. Enjoy Easter, enjoy the resurrection, enjoy Jesus.
For more information about Martha, visit MarthaFernandezSardina.com.
And now, a story by Mr. Juan Posada.
I just want to share with you guys this Lent was extremely fruitful for me and my family. And I impregnated my wife.
Oh!
What?
Yes! Yes!
Way to go!
Woo-woo!
Does it fit?
Story, we found out yesterday morning, Easter morning.
Easter morning.
All right.
Easter morning.
Check it out. And indeed it was. So.
Way to go.
Way to go, man.
Number three.
All right.
Santiago says he's a sister.
Does it feel like a boy or girl? I mean, gut reaction.
A gut reaction, girl. Just because.
That's what you want. You probably want to go. I'm guessing you. Because you got two boys.
The only thing is that I've been telling people that we have two boys, and I've been telling people I'm not going to stop having kids until I have a girl.
But now you may have a girl.
If I have a girl, I'm going to keep having kids.
You're going to have to come up with a new excuse.
I'm
going to have to backtrack it.
Yes, Juan's wife is pregnant. If you're just now joining, he just told us his wife is pregnant. They just found out.
On air. Easter morning.
And we just found out.
All right, that's it.
That is beautiful.
That was awesome.
That is beautiful.
That'll be a great intro to our podcast.
Warning, the Catholic Man Show contains high levels of manliness. It's simple, really. You either want to grow in virtue and holiness, or you want to be a sissy, whiny baby. If you choose to move forward, grab your whiskey glass, because the Catholic Man Show is starting right now.
Hey,
Hallelujah.
He is risen.
He is risen. And welcome to the Catholic Man Show.
Can I get an amen?
We're on the Lord's team, the winning side.
So raise your glass.
We are extremely excited because if you missed the Facebook announcement, Juan just told us that he and his wife is pregnant. They just found out.
I raise my glass to Juan. Juan, I drink to your fecundity, to your success,
and to your potency.
May it live on forever.
Cheers. How excited.
What I mean is I hope your kids go to heaven. That's what I'm
saying. Yeah, that's we hope you and your kids go to heaven. And your wife, obviously. And your wife.
I hope
your
everybody goes to heaven. I hope everybody goes. But right now, I'm just talking about you.
Dare we hope? Okay, let's get going on the Catholic Man Show. Yeah.
What are you trying to do here, bro?
Welcome to the Catholic Man Show. We're very excited to be on with you. We just got finished recording our first ever Patreon interview.
Yeah,
with Hugh Richardson. We had a lot of fun with that. You can go check that out on our podcast as well if you're just now tuning in.
Yeah, if you've been listening for a while, he was the one who sent us St. George gin back in the day.
Yes. So anyway.
Which, man, I got lucky enough to be the one to take that bottle home, and I nursed that thing for a long time.
Yes, you did.
It was good. I would just drink it straight. It was so good.
It was very good. If this is your first time listening to the Catholic Man Show, welcome. We're glad that you're joining us. We do three things every episode. We open, review, and enjoy a man beverage. We highlight a man gear, and we have a manly discussion. It's so funny when we get people who just tune into the Catholic Man Show for the first time. They either love or hate our show, and they obviously, like, they post a comment that'll say, "This is ridiculous. It took you 30 minutes before you even get to the topic."
Yeah.
And
if that's you, that's how you know if you're a reprobate or not.
Yes, it's true. We start the actual topic the second half of the show.
Which is why we tell you that in the beginning.
That's what we try to do every episode. Okay.
So we're doing a drink right now.
Yeah. So let's talk about the drink that we're having.
Yeah. Because this is a fine beverage. We've obviously... Our glasses have been filled already because we just did the interview with Hugh.
Right.
And we needed a... I don't know. It's weird to do an interview with an empty glass.
Right.
What are we supposed to do?
Yeah.
Well, yeah. What are we, apes?
Yeah. So the drink that we're having this evening is the Macallan. It's a 12-year
double cask.
Does
it always say the?
Mm-hmm.
I've never really noticed that.
You can catch the... There you go, Juan.
The Macallan.
The Macallan. It's typically a 12-year. It doesn't say this on there.
Did you
say
this is the double cask? Did you
say
that?
Okay. Yes, I did. Macallan is a very interesting distiller. You know, they just opened not too long ago, a little over a year ago, a $188 million new distillery. Have you seen it?
I have not.
Dude, this distillery looks...
Have you seen it?
Not in person, but
okay.
On video.
Okay.
This distillery looks like the architecture... The architect is from J.R.R. Tolkien.
Sweet. Is it castle-esque?
It's very like Hobbit-ish.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yes. It's like domed and there's like grass on the top of each dome within the distillery. It looks like...
Is it peat? Are they growing peat on top?
No, but that would be very... Actually, I'm not positive.
Because peat is just kind of a
grass.
Like a mossy grass.
But it's a very cool distillery. They, you know, like I said, they dumped $188 million into the distillery and just opened it a little over a year ago.
Yeah. Well, Macallan runs on the pricier side.
Yes, it's kind of the name brand. I think that it's so established that they can kind of do that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that they're probably the most recognizable name. I don't know, maybe the Glens.
You know,
the Glens are also really recognizable.
Like a Highland and a Speyside. Like, apparently, from what I've read, is it's... They call themselves Highland, but they're more of a Speyside in the Speyside area. And
are they in the Speyside area?
That's so. I read something.
Borderville, maybe.
I read something recently that said the difference between Highland and Speyside are so blurred and so back and forth that it's very hard to actually establish which one is Highland and which one is Speyside.
No true Scotsman, huh?
I don't know, but let's try it. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass. Cheers to Juan, his wife, to his new child.
To the Posada name.
To the Posada name. So the color is like a, it says it's a gold color. It's a light gold color.
Nice fruity notes on the nose.
Yeah, the aroma is lemon, citrus, orange peel with the interlacing sweetness of vanilla and dark chocolate.
Yep.
The palate says it's citrus and boiled sweets with hints of ginger and cinnamon, giving way to a toasted apples.
Yeah, toasted. Toasted apples. I would say Fuji apples. Toasted Fuji.
Oh, Fuji.
Yeah.
Very interesting. The finish is a medium sweet, malty, and slightly dry is what it says. You know, typically, we're not the Highland guys
in
the realm of whiskeys, because a lot of times, most Highlands are sherry casks. You know, they mature in sherry casks.
Most of them?
Most of the Highlands do.
I did not know that.
Not mature. I'm sorry. They're in there for a couple years. Not for 10 years or 12 years or 15 years, but the last couple of years, they typically are in the sherry cask. You know why they do sherry casks?
So most Highlands are not single barrels, huh?
Yes. A lot of them are.
Okay. I thought you just said most of them did a couple of years in a sherry cask, which would mean it's not a single barrel.
I think that you actually can still be a single barrel. Mm-hmm.
You can, even though you're not aged in one barrel?
Because it's aged, yeah, but the majority of it is aged in a single barrel.
This is just the world.
It's the whole content of one barrel that gets transferred.
Right, it's the whole content of one barrel being transferred into the next barrel. So, but the reason, you know why they do sherry?
The world is full of lies. I do not know.
Apparently, my understanding is that sherry gives it the most complex flavor without dominating the whiskey.
Okay.
So it kind of gives it more nuances. You can kind of play with the sherry, the amount of sherry that you add or the types of sherry that you add, where you can pour the whiskey into the barrel after you've put the sherry in there and drained the sherry. You can pour the whiskey in there. And depending on what sherry it is, it doesn't dominate the whiskey. It doesn't overpower it, but it kind of gives it the more subtle. The citrus, the lemon, the honey that is typical with the Highland and Speyside whiskeys.
That's where it comes from, the sherry?
A lot of the sherry.
See, I've never actually had sherry.
I haven't either. I think it's weird that
we should go get a bottle.
Is La Santa?
Well, La Santa is whiskey. We're talking about like sherry itself.
Sherry is in and of itself a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, that's good to know. I learned a lot just now.
You're welcome.
Macallan is a bottle that, especially if you've got some money to spend on your whiskey, on your bar, if you serve someone a bottle of Macallan, everybody's going to be really glad to have it.
Most people think that Macallan is, you know, it's so well known, and it's because it's very easy on the taste.
I would say it's the most universally well received glass of whiskey. Glass of scotch. Okay.
That's a distinction.
Sure. I might even say it's the most universally well-received whiskey. I mean,
I would not, but that's okay.
What would you say is?
Oh, I think some kind of like bourbon. Like, I think that most people would drink bourbon over scotch.
Do you?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe.
That's just my opinion.
Okay.
But anyway, so that's exciting. I think the Macallan is a good Highland scotch. I think, like you said, it's a good to have in your bar for guys who come over. If you're just getting into the scotch game, we've said this several times, but Highlands and Speysides are an easy transition from a bourbon, because you're not going to get the harsh of smoke. You're not going to get the peatiness. It's not going to just smoke you in the face, if you will.
It really is. This is a really good whiskey.
Yeah.
So I have to tell you this story.
Okay, go ahead.
This happened to me.
Is this a true story?
This is a true story.
That you made up?
No.
Not a true story.
I made it up by actually doing it.
Okay, let me hear.
This is on Holy Saturday. I was doing a little chainsaw work. I was raising the canopy on my tree out front. Because, you know,
I noticed that as I drove by.
Having some trouble with the grass right under the tree. So, you know, getting a little bit more sun. And I had my Bluetooth headphones on, audio booking, Unplanned.
Oh, nice.
The book.
Yes.
And so I'm out there listening to this story of Abby Johnson, you know, leaving Planned Parenthood. And I'm just getting to the point where she has left the clinic, and it's, you know, she's over there with the Coalition for Life. She has this very redemptive moment. And I'm using this chainsaw, and it, but it was just so touching. I'm out there like getting teary eyed, and and I'm out there in the front yard like crying as I'm chainsawing up this limb.
Cutting up the wood.
I'm like, that is so beautiful. And I was just out there like laughing at the fact that I'm sitting here crying using a chainsaw at the same time.
So many emotions. I'm in a glass case of emotions.
It was so funny. And I was like thinking like, it's a good thing I have glasses on, sunglasses, and you know, people can't see me cry using the chainsaw.
That is pretty good.
That's... It was a funny moment for me.
It is pretty good. Join us on Patreon. If you like the Catholic Man Show, you can support us via Patreon. Do what Hugh Richardson did and support us. Go to patreon.com/thecatholicmanshow. When we get back, we're going to jump into the man gear. And we're going to talk about backbiting.
Backbiting?
Hang in there. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles. Here with Adam Minahan. We got Juan Posada in the house.
Guess who we have next week?
Oh, Patrick Coffin.
Yeah, Patrick Coffin's going to be in studio next week.
In the flesh.
Yes. Ecce homo.
Ecce homo.
So that's exciting.
Yes. That will be awesome.
Mm-hmm. We don't even know what topic we're going to talk about yet. However, I asked him, I was like, so what do you want to say? He goes, no. Don't even tell me.
Yeah, he wants it to be a surprise.
So we're going to really surprise him. It may be this Friday. It may be Saturday. It'll most likely be Saturday that we record with Patrick.
Yeah, probably. We're shooting for Saturday morning.
There. You know what? The whiskey won't drink itself and the cigars won't smoke themselves on Friday night.
No, they do not.
So
that's the thing about them.
That's the thing about them is...
The thing about whiskey and cigars...
Is it takes...
Is that they need a lot of help.
Right. So that probably will not be... done until Saturday morning.
Okay.
Okay.
So we're talking, the man gear today is the umbrella.
The umbrella.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's it's interesting that the umbrella as a man gear, because there's this stigma about...
It's kind of a girly thing, you know, like...
Right. Well, when it initially started, when the umbrella became a fashion thing, not in the Chinese, like way back.
Yeah, because the Chinese,
like 4000 BC.
BC basically invented, they invented what would be called the parasol today, what we would refer to as a parasol.
Right. But once it finally became hitting mainstream, mm-hmm. it was only used for women. Women only used
it.
Right. And it was one dude in England. Oh, I forgot his name.
Hudson or something.
Yeah. Hanway like decided, no, I'm going to carry an umbrella.
Because I guess men before that, they would wear hats.
In the 16th century.
And they would just get, they would have an overcoat and a hat. And, you know, that would be their poncho, sort of,
mm-hmm.
I suppose.
Well, so what do you think? When I was younger, when I was in high school and stuff, I was like, and even in college, like, I am not going to carry an umbrella. I don't care if I get wet. I'm not carrying an umbrella.
I've never had any stigma about an umbrella.
No, mm-mm. Never.
No.
Okay.
Or even been aware that there was one.
Really?
Yeah.
You didn't know there was one?
No.
Like, there's guys out there still today that would rather run through the rain and get soaking wet than have an umbrella.
No. I mean, that's fine if they want to do that. Let me tell you, though. I'm a big fan of the golf umbrella. That's kind of the only kind of umbrella.
It's massive.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because... I mean, unless the rain is falling exactly straight down, which does not happen in Oklahoma.
No, it is not.
Then you're still going to get, your feet are going to get wet. Okay. Mm-hmm. Or your whole pants, you know, the knees below might get wet.
When we've been outside praying the rosary across the street from the abortion clinic, we've had to have your golf umbrella has come in handy multiple times.
The other thing about the golf umbrella is that it becomes a gentlemanly act because now you can also share an umbrella with somebody. You know, it's like, oh, hey, it's sort of like the flask. I'm here.
Don't worry, guys.
And I'm here to share.
Right.
Yeah.
Don't worry. I've thought about it.
I came prepared.
And I'm here to share.
I'm here to share.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I agree.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's why I like the golf umbrella.
So do you carry one or two umbrellas?
I do have a second umbrella in the car, a more small, regular umbrella.
Compact one?
Yeah. But the main umbrella that I have is a...
golf one?
I'm trying to remember, like, I was thinking 60 inches, that's...
no.
Too big.
Right. But it's a big one.
No, it is. I'll bet it's 60 inches. It's probably 5 feet. If I were to... it's 60 inches long, or in diameter.
Really?
5 feet.
Wow.
Yeah, because if I were to put it down, it was probably up to my shoulder.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. It's a big umbrella.
So the word umbrella comes from the Latin root word umbra.
Yeah.
Which
for
means
shade.
Meaning
shadow.
Shade or shadow.
We must have read the exact same thing. Yes, that is. That's the same. That's the exact same page. You printed it off.
I did.
I recognize it.
Don't worry. I've thought about it. I've come prepared and I'm here to share.
Yeah.
So, but it was an English gentleman's.
In fact, they even referred to it. What that guy, Hansen?
Hanway.
Hanway. They even used to call umbrellas a Hanway because he was the one who made them popular.
Mm-hmm.
But it was the Chinese who first put wax on these parasol, which are basically like a paper mache.
Right. Originally, the umbrella was just basically
just for
the sun.
For shade.
For shade, yeah.
Yeah.
And then they realized, hey, if we made this waterproof, we wouldn't get wet as well.
Yeah, yeah. So they put wax on it and then used it in the rain.
Yeah.
A long time ago. The Chinese, you know, they were the first to do a lot of stuff.
I agree.
A lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm. They've been around.
Yeah.
In 2008, the U.S. Patent Office registered 3,000 active patents for umbrella-related inventions.
In 2008?
Yes.
Are you serious?
I'm not joking.
Okay, because, you know, now they have, the inverted umbrella. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, there's a bunch. Yes, I do.
And I do see how if you're about to get into the car, that would be easier. The one thing I wonder about, though, is that you're basically...
Mary Poppins brought that into style, didn't she?
No, hers didn't go.
That was a joke. Go ahead. Keep going.
No, dude.
Sorry. Keep going.
She didn't.
Okay.
But you know what I'm talking about. It doesn't come down regular. It's almost like it goes up when it comes down.
Right.
So if you do that in the car, as you're getting in the car, you know, it's would be a lot easier to get through the window. But you're also going to fill up with water for a brief moment.
Mm-hmm.
And when you pull it in the car, now you're going to dump water out in the car a little bit. But if it's raining hard, it will be an amount. The thing is, the umbrella, there's no way to make a smooth transition into the car.
Into the car.
It just can't be done.
Right. You're going to get a little wet.
Yeah.
I associate, so if I had to pick a virtue with the umbrella, if I had to associate, it would be chivalry. Chivalry. I just envision you see all these old vintage photos of men walking down the sidewalk with women and he's holding the umbrella to keep her dry, you know, and maybe he's getting just a little bit wet or he's completely outside of the umbrella before the golf umbrella was maybe invented and he's holding it for her, and that's an act of chivalry.
Yeah And if you do just have a smaller umbrella, you hold it over her.
Yes, not yourself.
Well, you don't know.
Also, when you're walking down the sidewalk, you are the one that's supposed to, the men are supposed to be on the side of the street.
I was just about, that's what I was getting ready to say. I was just going to say, we should talk about also how to walk down the street with a woman.
Okay, go ahead.
Because you always put yourself between her and the cars.
Between the woman and danger.
Right. So, and that means you might switch sides as you're walking because you might make turns and every time I have done this with a woman, they have always noticed and really appreciated it. And it's not because, you know, they're too fragile to be close to traffic. Okay, that's not why they're doing it.
Right. No one thinks that.
Some women are like that. Well, and they're the same women who say, "Don't hold the door for me. I'm strong enough to get the door for me by myself." It's like, no kidding. I know that you're strong enough to open doors. I'm doing this to serve you.
Yes.
But that's men. That's what you do. Really, regardless what they think, you should do it anyway.
Especially with your wife.
Oh, definitely with your wife.
Right. Are you a guy who walks down with a woman? Like, you know how they do it where they put their hand on the hip side? You know, like they put the hip.
While walking?
Yeah, while walking.
No. I'm much too tall.
Yeah. Yeah. So you, especially with your wife. Your wife is short and you're tall. Doesn't really work. It doesn't really translate.
I couldn't pull that out.
Are you a hand holder?
Sometimes. I'm also an arm. I'll give my arm to a lady.
Nice.
Which is a good move.
I think that's a good move.
Because you give them your arm, and then they'll take, you know, they'll put their hand around your elbow, and you do that for just a second, and then you can put your hand in your pocket. Okay.
And then it's more comfortable.
Right. Then you're right. Your arm's not going to start to like go numb on you from just trying to hold it up. So you put your hand in your pocket. They're holding onto your arm.
It's just nice.
It is. It's nice because then they don't have to like hold your hand, because then there's always the big question with hand holding, you know, do you go regular or waffle style? You know, and if you go waffle, you know.
Is waffle the intermingle?
It's like.
Okay.
It's like prayer hands. Prayer hands, okay. Kind of. Yeah. That's waffle style. If you do that, you know, like for me, I have big hands.
Uh-huh.
And I'll like break a girl's hand if I.
Well, you don't squeeze it.
No. Just the fact if like her trying to spread her fingers out enough.
Oh, okay. I see.
To get, you know. And so anyway, the arm. Giving the arm. Also, it's also a classy look, I think.
I think it is a classy look, and it alleviates the hand sweating problem.
Yes.
Because if it's outside, in Oklahoma heat, man, that's something that you have to think about.
Sweltering.
Yes. And so if you're walking outside, it's easy to get your hands start sweating. So I like that move.
Yeah. So give it a try.
I have before, but I need to bring it back probably.
It's also appropriate to do with women who are not your wife.
Yeah, that's a good point, because if you're walking somebody across the street or something like that, you give them your arm, and that way it's not intimate, where it's not a handhold or something like that.
Right.
But it's still, you're being able to guide and assist.
Right. It'd be weird to do with a stranger, but you know, if you have a friend who's a woman, you know, that would be, this is appropriate to do. I mean, so it's a good one to have in your repertoire.
Yeah, I agree.
As it were.
I agree. What are your thoughts on this Macallan that we're sipping on?
Oh, it's double cask. It's fantastic.
You think so?
Yeah.
I think it's good. I think it's...
I think it's very good.
You do?
Yeah.
I'll give it about a 6.5.
I'm not prepared to give it a number, but I think it's very good.
All right. Well, when we get back, we're going to talk about backbiting, which is something that I knew nothing about until recently. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass. Catholic Man Show. Sipping on a little bit of the Macallan double cask. Just got done talking about the umbrella and really a little bit about chivalry in general. How to walk a woman across the street or down the sidewalk. And now we're going to jump into a topic called backbiting. And as most of you
which
know...
Which is weird.
Which
That's
is
a weird.
It's a weird
when
word.
When you said that, I was like...
You don't even know what it is.
I didn't know what it was. And I kind of went, you know, like, I don't like it. I don't, whatever it is, I don't like it.
I know.
Because I already had braces for an overbite. So I don't want to have to deal with a backbite.
Yeah.
You know,
like, I understand.
Braces were the worst.
I don't know anything about
them. They were the worst.
I didn't have any.
You didn't have braces?
Mm-mm, did not.
I can tell.
Yeah. So if you guys don't know, typically what we do is Dave and I switch off on topics. Dave will pick a topic. I'll pick a topic. If you're catching on, when it's my turn, I've been really diving into the Summa recently. So a lot of the my topics are just complete,
I've just been diving into the Summa.
Just leisurely.
It's just been
easy for me.
A nice,
Just nice
casual swim.
Just a casual swim.
Just through the Summa.
So if you don't like Thomas Aquinas, then skip every other week on the Catholic Man Show, because that's basically what I'm going to be. Those are going to be my topics.
Trying to make Matt Frad jealous? Is that what you're trying to do?
No. Matt Frad is way better than us. There's no way that Matt Frad would be jealous of us.
Oh, do you? Are you my attorney now or something?
Do you have a mouse in your pocket?
Are you speaking for me all of a sudden?
But so we're going to talk about backbiting, which is something that I found out about researching. I'm working on a project.
I can beat Matt Frad in solving the Rubik's Cube. I almost guarantee it. I almost guarantee it. There's no way he can beat me in that.
If there was a trophy for that, I'd give it to you.
Okay. All right. Keep going.
I'm working on a project right now, attempting to write a book. And so while doing that, I've been doing a lot of research on virtues and vices. And I came across, while reading the Summa, boom, right here. It was talking about, the question 73 was of backbiting. And I was like, what the heck is backbiting? I had no idea what backbiting was until I started reading about it. Now, obviously, once I tell you what it is, you'll know what it you just won't. At least for me, I didn't know what the term was. Now, I asked my parents and my grandparents what backbiting was, and they instantly knew what it was. I asked my cousins, who are around my age, what backbiting was. They'd never heard the term before. When I texted you, you had never heard the term before.
And I think it sounds weird.
It's a weird term. Okay, so let's get into it. Let's figure out what it is. So before we tell you exactly what it is, backbiting is a vice. A man can injure another person by deed in two ways, okay? Openly or secretly by deed, okay? Openly, an example would be like robbery. It's very public. Secretly would be like theft, okay? Like I steal something from you, no one knew about it, okay?
Okay.
A man injures another person by words in two ways. So deeds and words. In words, openly and secretly as well. Openly, they call it reviling him, as St. Thomas called reviling him, a person.
Okay, I'm with you.
And then secretly is done by backbiting.
Okay.
So it'd be secretly. So reviling somebody is detrimental to the honor that a person has, because you're doing it publicly. You're doing it like to their face.
Yeah.
However, he speaks against another secretly would be backbiting. So you're not disrespecting him, his honor, but his name, because it's like you still honor his honor. You respect his honor, I guess it would be a better way.
Yeah.
You respect his honor, but you don't respect his name.
Gotcha.
Okay. So, that backbiting is different than reviling in two different ways. It's obviously what we talked about, speaking openly or secretly. And then revilers injures honor, like we just said, and backbiters injures the good name. So that's something that is, I think, very common in today's world of backbiting is very...
Totally.
Is something that is very prominent in today's culture in general.
Yeah.
Even in the news cycle, you know, mm-hmm. like, but that would be openly, but just the culture that
so
that
is
around.
Backbiting always true things that you're saying.
Yeah, so backbiting is always
from gossip, because
right.
gossip.
Well, it's a type. Yeah, so man is said to backbite another not because he detracts from the truth, but because he lessens his good name, directly or indirectly. So it's not like you're not telling a lie about somebody.
Yeah.
But you're like saying, this guy does this and I just can't believe he does that. You know, he sins this way, and like, who sins that way? You know, so you're really demeaning the guy's name, which is something that St. Thomas says is very hard to redeem. Yeah, once you do it, the damage is done.
Yeah,
that's what I'm trying to say. So St. Thomas talks about it. He asks, is it a mortal sin? Is backbiting a mortal sin? So if you're talking to somebody else, so if you and I are talking and we're talking about Juan, and we're saying, can you believe Juan does this? Can you believe Juan does, you know, he sins this way? And it's true. He actually does sin this way. He actually does do this.
Yeah.
but we're secretly talking about it, and there's no reason, there's no good about this. You know, there's nothing good that's coming from this. You don't need to know this. There's nothing virtuous about you knowing this.
Mm-hmm.
Is it a mortal sin? That's what St. Thomas asks in the next question. And sins of words should be judged chiefly by their intentions of the speaker, is what St. Thomas says, which makes sense,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Sin, morality in general, I think, a lot of times has to do with intention.
Almost always. I mean, not always, but intention is got to be the biggest thing in morality.
Right. So St. Thomas says, and I'm quoting here now, "Now backbiting by its very nature aims to blackening a man's good name. It is a very grave matter to blacken a man's good name, because it is of all temporal things a man's good name seems the most precious, since for lack of it is hindered from doing many good things." I mean, so he's saying one is bound to once you do it, you're bound to restore his good name, which is kind of like your penance almost. Because that's very tough to do. So whether it is actually a mortal sin or not, St. Thomas would say it is a mortal sin to commit. Backbiting is a mortal sin.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that, first of all, I don't think that he could say it's a mortal sin. I think at most he could say it's grave matter.
Okay, so let's talk about what a mortal sin is. Go ahead.
In order to be a mortal sin, you have to have three things. It has to be a grave matter, what you're doing. So it has to be something serious. It's not, you know, just like a little thing. You have to know it's wrong,
mm-hmm.
and you have to freely choose to do it anyway. So in this case, when you're backbiting, you're freely choosing to do it, and you have to also know it's wrong. So I think many people just don't even consider whether or not this conversation that they're involved with, whether it's wrong or not. I mean, I think many people just have the conversation. I mean, it's just maybe a normal thing.
It's not even intentional.
It's a normal thing for a lot of people.
They're being careless.
Yeah, or they just have not, it's not even occurred to them that they should consider whether or not to have this conversation. You know what I mean?
I totally know what you mean.
That was me for a long time.
I mean, I read this, and then during Holy Week, I went to confession and made a general confession for this sin, because I felt like, I don't know if I've ever confessed this before in my life.
Yeah.
I've obviously made that mistake before. That's, you know, I've committed this before. So I made a confession, a general confession over this sin, because it was like, that's not something that I knew was a grave sin.
Well, I hope you brought me up a couple times in there.
No way, dude. I'd never talk bad about you. Never.
Yeah.
I mean, you're more of a big picture kind of guy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I didn't even mention this. Where's the camera? There it is. I am more of a big picture kind of guy, though. I mean, that's actually true. It's my T-shirt. If you're on the podcast, that's my T-shirt says.
Don't you think, though, that that's something that's that a lot of people would... Like, did you know that? Did you know it could be a grave matter?
I knew that...
I guess you can logically come to that conclusion if you thought about it. Right. If you thought about the process and thought about like what is actually happening, you probably could come to that conclusion.
Yeah. And I think grave matter is also a gray area. Sometimes I think it's possible that what is grave matter for one person might not be grave matter for somebody else, because maybe one person has grown in holiness, is much further along, and as such is more aware of, has a deeper knowledge of God, and therefore is held to a higher standard.
Due to their state in life?
Due to their knowledge of God, the revelation that he has given of himself to that person.
That's interesting. I'd like to get kind of Dominican on here to talk about it.
And so I think this is a good example of, like, for one person who just nobody's ever told them this is, that it's like, oh, well, for them it's not even really a grave issue. Right. Because they've got so many other things in front of them that they're, I mean, like...
Well, that was me.
They almost don't even have the capability of overcoming this sin.
Right.
Because it's so minor in comparison to so many other sins in their life. So, I don't know. I just think that that's... an issue.
Well, and men, let me tell you something. We've said this before, but it's worth saying again. If you are a married man, you never talk bad about your wife to other people.
And let's say that again on the other side of the break, because it's something that drives me crazy.
I think it's very, very much well worth saying again. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles, here with Adam Minahan. I can say this because Adam's in the room, but guys, he is just the worst. I cannot even explain to you what it's like to have to work with this guy.
Or even have him as a friend.
Oh, hi, Adam. Hey.
Yeah.
What's up?
Just talking about backbiting.
Just talking about stuff with my friends here.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, I do want to tell you about this guy at my office, okay?
Because, wait, are we not going to talk about talking bad about your
wife? Well, that's exactly what he does.
Okay.
He's all the time bashing his wife, and he's the biggest sinner.
Dude, you can't do that. No.
No.
Do not do that.
I don't.
I rebuke you.
Don't. But seriously, I do know people. I do know a man, and this isn't backbiting because I'm not putting down anyone's good name. But I do know a guy who very routinely complains about his wife. And it wears me out.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like somebody needs to stick up for this poor woman. And if you listen to him, his story, she's not a poor woman. She's a big nag, you know, but that's how I feel. It's like, dude. And so I try gently encourage him to like, you know,
stop talking bad about your wife.
You know, just like, but the beauty of marriage and stuff like that. I don't know if it does any good. But guys, if there is no such thing as off water cooler talk, bash you where you complain,
venting about
where you complain about your wife.
No,
it never happens.
Stop.
It never ever. You can complain about it to like maybe if you and your wife say, hey, you know these issues. I need someone to talk to. Is it okay if I mean like. Maybe if you had a mutual friend between the two of you.
I think this is a bad idea.
No, I mean, I think this is okay because sometimes in marriage, you need, it's not, you're not like on a boat by yourself. Sometimes you do need some good counsel in marriage. So if you have a holy friend, but they need to know both of you, a priest or a counselor. But I mean, sometimes you have a good friend who can just be that person to give you good advice, and you know that they know your wife, they're not going to like judge her or something. You know what I mean? That is a situation that can happen.
Okay. I don't want to comment
because
I don't know
in that situation, you're not just like complaining about your wife. You're going to them saying, hey, how should I handle this? You know, I really need your help as a friend and stuff. You know what I mean? There's a difference there between.
I think it can go one way really quick.
Yeah.
The next question that St. Thomas raises is whether backbiting is the gravest of all sins committed against one's neighbor.
Well, no.
Okay, so there's man's good is threefold.
Okay.
The good of his soul, the good of his body, and the good of external things. Similar to how when we talked with Carlo Broussard, a while back ago, and we were talking about the four levels of manhood, and there's earthly things that are good, bodily thing. There's heavenly things that are good. Us enjoying this whiskey in moderation is a earthly good that we're doing, that we're partaking in.
Yeah.
So he said, so murder, he says, is the most grievous since it deprives man of a life which he already possesses. After which comes adultery, which is contrary to the right order of human generation.
Let me just tell you, I would much rather someone put down my good name than commit adultery with my wife.
Well, then St. Thomas, you'd be agreeing with St. Thomas.
Yeah, I mean, that for me is an easy decision.
Right. And last comes external goods, like we were just saying, among which a man's good name takes precedence over of wealth because it's more akin to spiritual goods.
What's more akin to spiritual gifts?
The presence of his name over wealth.
Oh, over wealth. Okay.
Over wealth. Yeah. So a good name is better than great riches from Proverbs. Proverbs says a good name is better than great riches. Therefore, backbiting according to its nature is more grievous sin than theft, but it is less grievous than murder or adultery.
Okay. Because yeah. Okay. Good. I'm glad that's what he said, because I was worried that he was going to say, yes, it is the gravest thing you can commit against your neighbor. I was going to say, no, Thomas, I'm going to have to disagree with you on this.
But it's interesting that it's worse than theft, because you're stealing something that a good is theft, right? You're stealing a good.
And of course, he's speaking in general, because I would also say that, let's say your neighbor already has a terrible name and is very poor, mm-hmm. and you take all the money he has. Mm-hmm. That money is worth a lot more than his name is. And now he's going to starve. He and his family might starve. I mean, so of course, but St. Thomas,
well, he also says the gravity
Saint
of
Thomas
sin.
Thomas is speaking in general.
Right. And
here,
he says the gravity of sin is in relation to the sinner as well, which, yeah, like what you just said, yeah, it's deliberately or through weakness or carelessness. So if you're deliberately, like if you and I deliberately, like if I mentally say, I'm really upset with Juan for doing X, Y, and Z, and in order for me to just get this off my chest, I'm going to talk to you about Juan, you know, doing X, Y, or Z, and I'm deliberately thinking about it and coming to you and then blackening his name.
Yeah.
That would be a grave sin.
Yeah, I mean, and think about this in politics. I mean, this happens all the time where the intent of the ad is to discredit someone's name.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's all they're trying to do.
Right. I think that's it. But I think that's something that...
Even if what they say is true.
Right. Yeah, exactly, because that would be backbiting.
Right.
Because what you're saying is still true.
Yeah.
But...
Even though this isn't backbiting, because it's openly...
There's a difference, though, in carelessness.
It's not secret, it's open, you know. So.
Yeah, right. But there's difference also in carelessness. Like, if I'm talking to you all this, and then all of a sudden I'm telling you a story, and then all of a sudden part of the story is Juan did X, Y, or Z, and I said that to you... And it's not really part, like, it doesn't add to the story at all. It doesn't showcase anything that's really talking about the story. That could still be considered a venial sin.
Well, it can't be a sin unless you did it on purpose. I mean, sin always must have, you can never accidentally commit a sin. You can never unknowingly commit sin. I mean, that doesn't happen. Now, if you're kind of like in the middle of the story and you kind of like start to tell that part and you say like, oh, well, I'll just keep telling it because I'm already started. You know, at that point, you do have some intent behind it, because that's happened to me before where I've been, you know, telling a story. And then I realized kind of halfway like, oh, maybe I shouldn't tell the story. But you know, it's kind of a harmless story, whatever. It's not that big of a deal. And I just tell it anyway and move on, you know, but I kind of know, realize, like at the end of the day, if I do an examination of conscience, I think I shouldn't have said that, you know, that that wasn't good. But, and kind of halfway through, I had that revelation, you know, so there is some intent there. I think that's where it could come into play. But if you just have absolutely no idea and you just say it because...
Well, I also think that comes down to like sin makes you stupid.
Yeah.
You know.
Wait, what?
Yeah, exactly. So the last thing that St. Thomas talks about regarding backbiting is whether it's a grave sin for the listener to suffer through the backbiting. Okay, so that's something that's interesting. So like, again, in our example, if I'm sitting here talking to you about Juan doing X, Y, or Z, is it a mortal sin for you to listen to me without rebuking me?
Can't wait till the next time you do this, dude. I'm going to rebuke you so hard.
So in Romans, St. Paul talks about he's talking about when somebody is worthy of death. And he says, not only that they commit sins, but they also that they consent to them, that they do them. So they're consenting to the person who's doing the sin is worthy of death, which I think that's a hard line, right?
It's a very hard line.
Yeah. So this happens in two ways: an introduction of sin for another when the sin is pleasing to him. So like we use the example, I was deliberately saying this because it feels good to get this off my chest that Juan was doing X, Y, or Z to you.
Yeah.
Or in Human Fear is also another one. So
I don't know that.
So Human Fear would be like, if I'm telling you this and you're the person who's supposed to be rebuking me,
yeah,
because of either a lack of courage, lack of fortitude, a lack of being able to stand up, a lack of fearing of what I would think of you if you stopped me.
Yeah.
That would be the human fear.
Mm-hmm.
So
and that makes sense to me because sometimes there have been times where even recently I was having a conversation with an elderly man. This is in my office again.
Mm-hmm.
And he was commenting on the vice of another person. And I would have, if it was somebody else, I would have said like, hey man, we don't need to like, we've all got our problems. All right. We don't need to talk about this. But because of his age,
mm-hmm,
I didn't say anything just because I felt like I would be disrespectful if I didn't correct him. But the truth is I should, you know, that it's not disrespectful, okay, you know.
So let me tell you what St. Thomas would say about that.
Okay. Does he mention this scenario?
Similar.
Pretty
to.
Pretty close?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm quoting here. If, however, the sin is not pleasing to him and fails to withstand the backbiter through fear, negligence, or even shame, his sin is indeed but much less than the backbiter himself. And as a rule, it's venial.
Well, that's good.
So, I mean, but I think that's very, I mean, that's a hard line. That's still a hard line.
Yeah.
So for it to be mortally sinful to be a listener of backbiting, St. Thomas says it has to be his official duty to correct the backbiter and he doesn't do it.
Okay, so
let me get these all three out before we get,
okay,
because
we're
almost done. By reason of some consequent danger or a radical point for which human fear may sometimes be a mortal sin. So much so that you just you're just so scared, you don't have any fortitude whatsoever, that you don't say it. Even if you aren't, it's not your duty.
Then it would be a mortal sin,
mm-hmm,
is what you're saying?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So, anyway.
Well, darn.
Hope you guys enjoyed this episode. Hopefully, we were articulate enough to understand what backbiting is.
We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com.
CMF Curo is the country's first Catholic healthcare ministry to provide an affordable health sharing solution rooted in Catholic teaching and community. Learn more at mycatholichealthcare.com/podcast. That's mycatholichealthcare.com/podcast.